now with a report to the people. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow citizens. This government, as promised, has maintained the closest surveillance of the Soviet military buildup on the island of Cuba. Within the past week, unmistakable evidence has established the fact that a series of offensive missile sites is now in preparation on that imprisoned island. The purpose of these bases can be none other than to provide a nuclear strike capability against the Western Hemisphere. The characteristic of these new missile sites indicate two distinct types of installations. Several of them include medium-range ballistic missiles capable of carrying a nuclear warhead for a distance of more than 1,000 nautical miles. Each of these missiles, in short, is capable of striking Washington, D.C., the Panama Canal, Cape Canaveral, Mexico City, or any other city in the southeastern part of the United States. To halt this offensive buildup, a strict quarantine on all offensive military equipment shipment to Cuba is being initiated. I have directed the continued and increased close surveillance of Cuba and its military buildup. Should these offensive military preparations continue, thus increasing the threat to the hemisphere, further action will be justified. I have directed the armed forces to prepare for any eventualities. It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States, requiring a full retaliatory response upon the Soviet Union. Finally, I call upon Chairman Khrushchev to halt and eliminate this clandestine, reckless, and provocative threat to world peace and to stable relations between our two nations. I call upon him further to abandon this course of world domination and to join in an historic effort to end the perilous arms race and to transform the history of man.
That was the nightly news on October 22, 1962. The average person saw headlines in the paper that said, "President to address the nation tonight." And they were being told that it was of highest national priority. That night in October, people like you and me found out that their worst fears had come upon them, that the Soviet Union and the United States were steamrolling towards each other in what appeared to be a nuclear showdown. Let me set the stage for you, because I want to talk today about conflict resolution and some godly principles on how some tools that are available to us for conflict resolution. And I think the missiles of October, or the Cuban Missile Crisis, is perhaps a good tool to use, because as far as physical things go here on this earth, when you have two nations that are about to do this with their nuclear missiles, that's about as serious a problem as you can probably get. It's the highest, to my knowledge, it's one of the highest stakes poker games that's ever been played as far as conflict resolution. Let me set the stage for you. Khrushchev, who's the leader of the Soviet Union, obviously that was President Kennedy, during this conflict, or during this issue, he had authorized the field commanders of Cuba to use tactical nuclear weapons. That means that they could be fired on their discretion. We're talking about colonels and lieutenant colonels probably having authority to fire nuclear missiles, tactical nuclear missiles. Castro, during this time, was in a bunker, in a nuclear fallout bunker, and he was on the phone to Khrushchev telling him that a nuclear strike by the United States, sorry, that a nuclear, that a invasion by the United States was imminent, and he was on the phone urging Chairman Khrushchev to do a preemptive nuclear strike against the United States. The Soviets were concerned that the U.S. had missile superiority, and probably at that time we did. So in short, that there was a missile gap, and they were the ones that didn't have as many. The U.S. had missiles in Turkey, 150 miles from the Soviet border. And prior to this, the military had done a military exercise where they invaded a Caribbean island and deposed. This is, you know, a mock war game, and the war game involved deposing and overthrowing a military dictator named Orstak, which is Castro spelled backwards. Obviously, the subtleties of this stuff is, you know, it didn't go unnoticed by the Cubans and the Soviet Union. The Bay of Pigs invasion had already failed, so we'd already made one attempt to attack Cuba. So against this backdrop, to say the least, the tensions were very high. President Kennedy was perceived by Khrushchev as weak and inexperienced. And that came about because of a Vienna conference in June of 1961. In Khrushchev's mind, Kennedy did not handle himself very well, had not been able to negotiate very successfully. And so Khrushchev felt that because of perceived weaknesses in President Kennedy, that he could probably get away with this. Well, I think there's three things we can pull out of the Cuban Missile Crisis for conflict resolution, at least three things. The first one is that there's safety in a multitude of counselors. When you and I have got problems in the natural, when we're in over our head on a problem, whether it's a legal problem, a medical problem, an accounting problem, whatever kind of problem, it's wise to get good counsel. Proverbs 11:14, we don't need to turn there, but you know it as well as I do. It states, there's safety in a multitude of counselors. President Kennedy had a lot of counselors during that time. He was speaking with his National Security Council and the military. They were all telling him what they should do. And there was basically six options on the table. One was to do nothing. This would be what I think Cindy Sheehan and probably the more liberals in the country would argue. Do nothing. Ignore it. The U.S. had military bases in 127 countries, including Cuba. We had nukes in countries that were close to the Soviet Union. If we were doing that, it was fair game that the Soviet Union would park missiles off of our shores in Cuba. Number two was to negotiate, cut a deal. The thought was to swap the missiles, take the missiles out of Cuba in exchange for us taking missiles out of Turkey and Italy. But meanwhile, the military buildup in Cuba goes on. One was to invade Cuba and depose Castro. And again, Castro believed this was imminent. One was to do a military blockade, to stop the equipment from reaching Cuba. Number five was strategic bombing, some type of surgical strike. They were fearful of that because they felt that would ultimately result in an armed conflict with the Soviet Union. And believe it or not, number six was actually global thermal nuclear war with the Soviet Union. The president's committees were so divided on what to do that there was no clear consensus in the room, but initially the decision was to do the strategic bombing, believe it or not. And Kennedy decided to put there was just so much dissension over what to do, he decided to postpone the decision and have a meeting later on that day. And apparently, somehow in this cooling off period, it was put forth that strategic bombing would only escalate the situation. And ultimately, the consensus came out of those meetings that the best course of action was to impose a military blockade, not to stop every ship and airplane from reaching Cuba, but only those that had military hardware on them. That was the course of action that Kennedy set about doing, and was what he was referring to in the speech. Another point of conflict resolution. I see this violated a lot because I deal with conflict. I make my living involving sorting out conflict. And a tool that I believe is in the Bible, and I believe it works well, and I believe it's all, got its fingerprints all over the Cuban Missile Crisis, is avoid provocation and avoid being provoked. For this, I think Proverbs 15:1 is insightful. It says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. You know, it's easy to want to be provoked. Kennedy could have sensed that Khrushchev felt that he was weak, and maybe for personal reasons, maybe he wanted to show Khrushchev how tough he was. I think my personal opinion is Kennedy handled this situation pretty well with a great deal of restraint. But if you think about it, what would have happened if Kennedy had provoked Khrushchev further? Khrushchev sent two letters during the Cuban Missile Crisis to President Kennedy about how to resolve the situation. One of the letters was sent on October 26th, and it was a very long, rambling letter that everybody thought, in the final analysis, was essentially proposing that you take the missiles or you agree that you won't invade Cuba and we'll take the missiles out of Cuba. They thought it was not a very clear letter. While they're looking over that letter, the next day a second letter arrives from Khrushchev, and this one said, we will take the missiles out of Cuba if you take the missiles out of Turkey. The first letter was private, president to president. The second letter was published to the media. So then President Kennedy's staff, they all ran around the barn about how do you respond to these letters. And I'm sure there was a lot of talk. Do we treat them as one letter since they're same subject and basically contemporaneous? What do we do? I think Kennedy decided to give a soft answer. So what he did is he accepted the first letter. He sent a response that was focused entirely on the first letter. We'll agree not to invade Cuba. You agree to take the missiles out. And he basically ignored the second letter, did not address it. That worked. That's what got the ball rolling. If that had been mishandled, if he'd have wrote back and said, you know, I can't believe in a time like this you'd send me an unclear and duplicitous letter, you know, and on and on. Instead, he handled it very coolly. He saw an opening and he took it. He found a way to make peace and he took it. He avoided being provoked and provoking. He didn't want to. Provocation's going to escalate situations. And in my opinion, you always want to be the person. You always want to be slow to escalate a situation. Third thing that comes out of the Cuban Missile Crisis is keeping your options open. Keeping your options open. The Bible speaks about this in Ecclesiastes 11, verse 2, which says, "Give a serving to seven and also to eight, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth." At that point in time, President Kennedy did not know which way this was going to break. He did not know if the military blockade would work or be successful. They could have be at peace the next day, or they could be at DEFCON 1 in a very short period of time. So while he was performing the military blockade, he was also staging men in Cuba. He put 175,000 army troops in Florida, preparing to invade Cuba. He also evacuated all of the dependents from Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Remember, we had a submarine base that we acquired there before it fell to Castro, which we know it as Gitmo today. He also bolstered up the forces at Gitmo. Again, preparing that, hey, option A may not work. I'm going to try that, but I'm going to keep my options open. I'm going to give portion to seven, even eight, because I don't know exactly what's going to happen on this. There's probably a lot more biblical principles for conflict resolution that we could pull out of this or find examples of, but this is at least three, and I hope that when you've got conflict or you've got problems, that you'll remember some of these principles. Number one, when you're in over your head, seek counsel. There's safety in a multitude of counselors. Number two, avoid provoking people. Avoid being provoked. Don't let people provoke you. Number three, keep all of your options open because you don't know what the day's going to bring forth.